Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
When is a translation not a translation? Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today to discuss this question is my colleague, Eric Johnson. We are continuing our look at a transcript of a Q&A session that was held in Stockholm, Sweden, back in November of 2010, when two Mormon historians, Marlon K. Jensen and Richard Turley, Jr., were asked to go speak to a group of Swedish members and hopefully answer some of the questions that they had regarding Mormon history. Now, when we're looking at the transcript, we're finding, at this point, some of the answers that were given to these Swedish members. And so far, Eric, I think you would agree with me that the answers are not all that satisfying.
No.
Which is tragic because these answers are supposed to be coming from the two top historians in the church at that time. Marlon K. Jensen was actually the church historian in 2010. Now, he's not any longer, but he was at that particular time. And also, Richard Turley is a very, I would say, able Mormon historian. But here's the problem. The Swedish members are asking about the translation of the Book of Mormon, and they're being told that a translation, as we understand it, as a term, this is what Turley said, translation as a term is not the type of translation you and I might think about. But yet, how many times have we had Mormons tell us that Joseph Smith translated the gold plates from the Reformed Egyptian into English? And the way I just worded it, most people, I would assume, look at that as a translation from Reformed Egyptian into English.
That's the common use of the word, and that's how we understand the word translate.
Richard Turley goes on to explain this further to these Swedish members, and this is what he says.
He says the method of translation was up to the Lord, and the Lord chose to use a method of translation that was far more efficient, far better, and far more accurate than anything Joseph Smith could have done letter by letter. Because it would have taken him, he didn't know the language. How else was he going to translate it if God didn't help him?
Well, here's the thing. If you're expecting this to be a translation as most people use the word, then why are they using a different definition and not explaining to the listener that they in fact are using a different definition for that term? I think that becomes perplexing. Now, he goes on to say in the next paragraph of this transcript, he says, why the Urim and Thummim and why the hat? And as we discussed yesterday, Joseph Smith did in fact use a hat and he used a seer stone in order to translate the golden record. Now, he talks about the Urim and Thummim. I cannot assume that the Urim and Thummim is the same as the seer stone because the way they're physically described is very different. The Urim and Thummim, according to Mormonism, were two stones in a silver bow that were buried with the plates. The seer stone that Joseph Smith had with him, he found while digging a well with his brother Hiram at a completely different time.
If you want some background information on what Bill is talking about here, we have an article on our website. It's called A Seer Stone and a Hat, Translating the Book of Mormon. That's found on our website, mrm.org/translation. I think you'll find that to be interesting. I typed that into Google, Bill, and I just typed in hat and Book of Mormon. It was the number two site that came up. So this is obviously an article that a lot of people are going to be able to find out more about this issue.
Well, he's going to answer, I should say, Richard Turley is going to answer the question about the hat. And he says the hat was apparently to block light out so that Joseph could see what he was doing with the record. Now, I have to question that because, first of all, when he's using the hat, he's not looking at the record.
No.
There's no way that the gold plates would have fit in any type of hat used by a regular human being. Their plates were just too large. They were 6 inches wide, 8 inches long, 6 inches deep. I don't know of too many hats that would have fit in at all.
These plates are metal, so they're going to be tearing any kind of hat apart.
Well, when he says that so he could see what he was doing with the record, even that, Mr. Turley, is misleading. He's looking at a rock when he's looking into the hat. It's not that this has never been said. We know for a fact that Russell M. Nelson, a Mormon apostle, did talk about the seer stone and the hat, but it was way back in 1993. We went on LDS.org trying to find how many times the phrase seer stone is found on LDS.org. Now remember, these Swedish members were chided for going to websites other than those that are authorized by the LDS Church. But yet when you go to the website, LDS.org, and you look up seer stone, it's not that there isn't any mention of it. We need to be quite upfront with you on that. But it's very rarely that you ever hear anything about the seer stone and its connection with the translation of the Book of Mormon. However, what did Russell M. Nelson say about that in 1993? Because in his talk, he basically quotes from an address to all believers in Christ, which was written by David Whitmer and it was published in 1887. Now, certainly it was not published right after the fact, but it was certainly coming from his memory, and we have to assume that Russell M. Nelson agreed with what Whitmer actually wrote in this booklet because he cites it word for word.
He says, I will now give you a description of the manner in which the Book of Mormon was translated. Joseph Smith would put the seer stone into a hat and put his face in the hat, drawing it closely around his face to exclude the light. And in the darkness, a spiritual light would shine. A piece of something resembling parchment would appear, and on that appeared the writing. One character at a time would appear, and under it was the interpretation in English. Brother Joseph would read off the English to Oliver Cowdery, who was his principal scribe, and when it was written down and repeated to Brother Joseph to see if it was correct, then it would disappear, and another character with this interpretation would appear. Thus, the Book of Mormon was translated by the gift and power of God, and not by any power of man.
Now, I'm going to assume that Richard Turley is agreeing with this account, that that's how the Book of Mormon came about.
He would have to.
Well, because he says that the method of translation, as you said earlier, Eric, the method of translation that was far more efficient, far better, and far more accurate than anything Joseph Smith could have done letter by letter. If this is the way it happened, there's no margin for error.
No.
The only way it would go on to the next set of characters is if the translation, quote unquote, was completely accurate. Until it was accurate, it would not go on to the next set of characters. So if you have no margin for error, then we have to ask, well, why then has the Mormon Church seen fit to change the Book of Mormon over 4,000 times since the original 1830 edition? And I'm going to admit that a lot of those changes are merely grammatical, but there are textual changes. There's no doubting that. There are textual changes. Why are there textual changes if this was a far more efficient, far better, and far more accurate means, according to Richard Turley?
Well, and that was the point I was going to bring out, Bill, is that a Mormon is going to argue that it was just a bunch of grammatical changes. But as you pointed out, there were some major changes. They changed Benjamin and Mosiah's names.
The word not. That changes the meaning.
Yeah, I mean, there, and you can find that all over the internet and on our website as well. But yeah, this is something that a lot of Mormons don't know because they think it's all just a bunch of grammatical mistakes that the printer made, and that's not true at all.
The next question after this explanation by Richard Turley is, this is one of the Swedish members, it may have been Hans Madsen if I'm not mistaken. Can you see that we feel deceived? Now, if Hans, I don't think, really has an excuse on this. And I want to be upfront with this because Hans Madsen is a generational Mormon. We know that he went on his mission in the 70s. His father was a Mormon. His grandfather was a Mormon. So he's raised in this. Now, he should have known, I would think, that at least Russell Nelson talks about this method of translation in the 1990s. Maybe he missed that. I don't know. But it was out there, so he's really without excuse. My concern is more with the newer members, because we don't find the talk about the seer stone and the translation of the gold plates being something that's pretty common knowledge. In fact, we find even with a lot of American Mormons, they don't even know about the seer stone and the hat.
No.
And usually when we bring that up, they look at us like we're lying. But when he says, can you see that we feel deceived? When you say translated, you had the record and you translated. Like with the papyrus, you know. Now, I'm assuming he's talking about the papyrus that was used in the book of Abraham. Mm-hmm. Because he was translating them, the questioner says. But he wasn't. It would be much better if you said he was sitting and praying and got the revelation. But it's kind of deceiving to say it that way. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Words have meaning, and the word translation has a certain meaning. And this questioner is saying, why do you use a word like translation if you don't mean translation the way that we traditionally understand that term?
It's kind of like Article 8 in the Articles of Faith, where they say we believe the Bible as far as it's translated correctly. If that's what they really meant, we would certainly agree with that. We want a correctly translated Bible. But that's not what they're implying. They're implying by that phrase that the word was not transmitted accurately. That's different than translation. They should use the word transmitted if that's what they mean. So here is another case where the Mormon Church is defining words differently or how most people would define those words. So it does seem a little bit deceiving. But then Turley goes on to say, I think that's a difference in perception rather than in reality. When Joseph used the term translate, quote unquote, he meant revelation, okay? Well, then say that. Say that. Don't tell people that he has the ability to translate from one language to another like we would assume most people who have studied a language have the means for taking one language and translating it into another. Because it gives the person a false perception. Why not just be upfront and honest about this? This is really all that these Swedish members are wanting. They're just wanting some honesty from their own church, and they're finding problems with that. Now, after Turley gives this explanation that translate to Joseph Smith really meant revelation, he goes on to say, well, but we're running out of time.
That's the key of this whole conversation.
We've got to get through this because we've got to get on to Los Angeles the next day, and which was sad because, as I've said, they should have prepared themselves to answer these questions adequately for these very sincere members.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. Are you confidently prepared to share your faith with your Latter-day Saint friend or acquaintance? Do you feel that you have an adequate grasp of Mormon doctrine and history? If not, then we encourage you to attend Mormonism Research Ministries' Compassionate Boldness Symposium on Saturday, September 21st. This four-hour event will take place at Calvary Chapel Wasatch Front in Clearfield, Utah. MRM's Bill McKeever and Eric Johnson will focus on such issues as the Book of Mormon, the Godhead, and salvation. Special emphasis will be made on how to answer LDS proof texts and the questions Mormons may pose. This event, by the way, is free and open to the public, so everyone is invited to come. For those who would like to do further research, a book table will also be available. Again, this Compassionate Boldness Symposium will take place starting at 9 a.m. on Saturday, September 21st at Calvary Chapel Wasatch Front, located at 564 South 800 East in Clearfield. We look forward to seeing you there.